Goodcast listeners.
Hello, everyone.
It's Alex and Storm here.
It is.
And we are coming at you with another great Goodcast.
Another gripping episode.
So this week we got to speak to Parnaz Jalali and Adam Christensen, a second time Goodcast
Adam
guest.
Just can't get enough of
cannot her. Get enough
of the good enough casters.
Of the Goodcast vibes.
Mm-hmm.
So we spoke to the pair about their experience of being, I guess, an experimenter and experimentee.
Yes, so I think PJ was the experimenter.
Yeah, she's doing a PhD in the pharmacology of a anti-inflammatory drug, but looking very much at the process of
inflammation
and the role that this drug is having, because it's poorly understood where exactly in the pathway the drug interacts.
So she used, Adam was her second participant, and so we got to hear from both them, from Adam's perspective, what it was like being a participant, and also from PJ's perspective, what it was like being a project coordinator. So this would be a helpful episode for any PhD students out there that are running their own experiments. PJ gives some really helpful advice, and it's just great to hear about what she's actually doing. I could have heard lots more about the actual information process and more information about that. It sounds so interesting.
Yeah, it was a really good experience to talk to the two of them about, and we hope you enjoy.
Enjoy. Right, so we are here with the lovely PJ and Adam again. Hello, Adam and PJ. So welcome both. We are sitting in the small common room and it's a chilly day and we're expected to have snow tomorrow. So it's quite exciting. Did you know that, Adam? Okay, well, I just burst your bubble. We're going to have snow, apparently.
And it is also exciting to be here with such interesting guests. So, PJ, can I ask you to tell our listeners a little bit about your background and what you're studying and doing at the moment?
So, my background is I'm a pharmacologist. I did an integrated BSc and Masters at University of Leeds. I then undertook a PhD, that was a human study, which we're going to talk about today, between the Royal Veterinary College and UCL, but most of my time is at the moment.
Great. And Adam, you are a Goodcast veteran, but you might remind our listeners of what you're studying.
Yeah, so it's great to be back. Thanks for having me. I'm a sociology PhD at Goldsmiths. I'm studying an HIV intervention called PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, and I did a Goodcast a couple months ago. Please, you know, link in the description or whatever they do.
Yeah, I think we called it Let's Talk About PrEP. Is that what we called it?
That is, I think, the name.
Yes, okay.
But you guys are here today to talk about the experience of both participating in and coordinating a study, and that's really what you, I suppose, have bonded over and have experienced together. So tell us a little bit about what the study is that you're both involved with.
So so my study is looking at the anti-inflammatory and pro-resolution effects of a drug, but I'm only using the drug to understand the mechanism. It's a tool, so I'm not looking at it as therapeutics, whereas the drug company will be.
Mm-hmm.
And I am looking at the number of cells that are affected in an inflammatory response. And we've done the animal models before I came to do this PhD, and really my role in the coordination of the study is to understand whether it's a translational data from the animals into humans. So it's quite exciting to be using the last stage rather than do the animal work, which is what a lot of people do there. But it's quite exciting to have a PhD that involves human work.
I can imagine. And now being able to speak to your actual
participants.
Yeah, instead of little mice that you could speak to, but they wouldn't reply back.
They wouldn't reply, no.
No.
It's not in English.
No, not in English. That's true. Okay, and could you just... So when did Adam participate in your study?
So Adam came to do my study last week, from Monday to Wednesday.
Okay. And can you give us a brief little overview of what that involved?
So the study works in a way where we have a model that allows us windows into what is happening during a resolving inflammatory response in humans. So we initiate that response by injecting intradermally into the forearm dead E. coli, which will induce an inflammatory response, which is obvious. We then use negative pressure to create blisters on the forearm. They're not the same effect as you have when you rub your shoe on the back of your foot, but it's the same effect, really. I pop that blister and I take the fluid and I analyse the cells and all the proteins and lipids that are within that fluid. So Adam came to see me on Monday morning and I injected his forearms. I didn't, a clinician did, not trained in that way, but and we took some blood from him, baseline blood. Then 4 hours later he came back and my time point was a 4 hour blister on one of his arms. To look at acute inflammation, so this is when your defense system is really kicking in and your white blood cells are pouring into that area to try and fix what is happening. And then Adam came back the next morning, Tuesday morning at 9 a.m, and I blistered his other arm. That should be your resolution phase, so your body should be in mode of clearing the debris that's there. And then he came again on Wednesday morning and he donated some blood as well for me, just to see if everything's back to normal. But it's a 3-day protocol. Adam was my non-drug group. But if people take the drug, they just have to be there 1 day more for me to check they're okay before they go.
All right. And obviously, Adam, you're here with us. Looking healthy, so obviously it all went well. Before I ask you about what that whole experience was like, can you tell us a little bit about what led you to become involved in the study, why you were interested?
So I didn't know PJ before the study. I was introduced by a mutual friend who basically approached me and said, "Hey, you're a boy."
You are.
I appreciate that.
Outstanding powers of observation.
Said, you know, I've got this friend who's doing this study. Do you have 3 days of time?
And do you have blood?
And
do you have blood?
Yeah. And forearms.
You know, being the astute observer that she was, she knew that I had blood. Initially, I was sort of not sure if I really wanted to participate. There was a pretty large time commitment. There's 3 days. You have to be in at a specific time. You know, BJ was pretty strict about, you know, showing up at exactly sort of 9 each day. Otherwise, I guess my inflammatory response would be, you know, just, you know, minutes away. So it'd be different. But what became immediately very interesting to me was exactly how human the interactions were, the fact that, you know, I had to sit in this machine called I don't know the full name, they called it the Doppler.
Yeah, we call it the Doppler machine.
Perfect.
But I don't actually know what it is.
So the Doppler machine is, so one of the signs of inflammation is redness and swelling, which is caused by infiltrating cells into the area. For that to happen, you need vasodilation to happen. So we have this machine called the Doppler machine that sends a laser, and it kind of lasers your arm all the way through that area. And what it does is it picks up the scattering of that laser beam and it detects it, and it kind of gives you a heat map of how many cells are in that area. So you can tell cells are going in at a certain time point. So I can show you some pictures later if you guys are interested.
Perfect.
But at a 4 hour time point, you can see, first of all, if you do a baseline, you'll see Adam's veins nicely just running down. You can see the red blood cells, you know they're moving because they've got scattering. But at 4 hours, his body is into acute inflammatory mode. And you see that heat spot becoming red, that area we've injected becomes red, showing us there's more cells. And for him to do that, he needs to sit very still for 5 minutes, like this, for the scanner to go across his arm.
Okay.
You know, like I've been in medical situations as a human being. You know, you go see your doctor, they run tests, they check to see, I don't know, whether I have bones, I don't really know. But what you're not really clued into is, you know, exactly how sort of run-of-the-mill those things are for them,
mm-hmm.
Because you're so usually concerned about whether or not you have bones.
Mm-hmm.
So what I immediately sort of got clued into here was that, you know, the doctors, there was a clinician that was working there, PJ, from time to time, some of her colleagues come in and they would be sort of gossiping or talking about, sort of goings-ons. And what was neat about going for 3 days is that I started to sort of see things that were happening beyond the test that made me feel very sort of motivated to come back because I wanted to hear more about this sort of environment.
Uh-huh. Okay. I
became a little ethnographer, as I say.
But then to come back to, and I suppose where it links in with your specific research, that experience of actually becoming infected. Now, obviously, this was with dead E. coli, so you weren't going to become systemically unwell. But would you talk a little bit about what that was like?
Well, I spoke to other people, and they said sort of that they dropped out because they thought it was a bit icky, the
mm-hmm.
idea of being infected, even though these things were dead. And
mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that that we don't quite understand and that I was sort of interested in experiencing was, does it matter if the thing is dead?
Mm-hmm.
If it's, you know, what is effectively, you know, poop bacteria, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
you make my job that sounds so glamorous.
Yeah,
that's so funny.
Well, I would imagine that your body would have an intense response to something that, you know,
yeah.
shouldn't be in your arm.
Yeah.
The neat thing about this is that I got to sort of have this experience of being infected.
In a controlled environment, though.
See, and I did want to go back to this. I was thinking about this as one of the things that I was thinking about, you know, when I finally got to have coffee again.
Yes, yes.
So I wasn't allowed
it's
to
one
have
of the
coffee.
Things you can't have during.
Oh, because it's pro-inflammatory.
Mm-hmm.
Damn caffeine.
Or alcohol.
Okay, of course.
Yeah, so my
tough couple of days for you, Adam.
You know, I was saying that my whiskey in one hand, my coffee
in the other.
Exactly. But, you know, one of the reasons that people choose not to vaccinate is largely because they don't trust what's in there. They don't want to put even half-dead
mm-hmm.
Bacteria or viruses or things that are rendered benign into their bodies,
mm-hmm.
right? So. And I think this is a real thing that people experience. So being sort of a grad student who's preoccupied with these sort of questions, I was like, yeah,
sociologist.
Yeah.
And how did that whole process feel? You know, when you mention blistering, it doesn't sound particularly pleasant.
Yeah.
What was it like to watch me?
So, I'm a bit of a geek, so when your blister started raising, I got very excited. I was like, oh wow, like, I get to find something that, or look at something that no one's ever looked before. There's
yeah.
just something so novel about
mm.
it,
yeah.
and so disgusting at the same time.
Yeah.
But you kind of push that to the back of your mind, and you get excited about the science. And I think in the room, the energy was, as soon as it was raising, I think could have seen my face and my colleague's face. We were all like lit up. We're like,
oh
it's this go time, you guys.
Wonderful.
We've got some results. And
I was reading a book.
Yeah.
Okay, so you weren't
yeah.
like, on the same level. Okay.
Yeah, I remember you guys had, they were very excited about sort of like a colloquial name for the pre-blister that people were very excited about.
We called it a bleb, so when it starts coming up,
mm-hmm.
we call it, oh, you see the bleb, and that's when you know you have to get everything ready.
Mm.
Okay.
Because in a couple of minutes to, well, yours took a little while longer,
mm-hmm.
you have very thick skin on,
mm-hmm.
so what I'm saying. We know that it's coming up, and you don't want to push it too far, because
yeah.
you don't, obviously, it's precious sample in there, you don't want to burst it.
Of course.
So there's also that excitement and adrenaline towards the end, I mean, you wouldn't imagine this is included in a PhD project, but towards the end, when you think you're going to take this cup off of someone's arm and you're going to see this beautiful blister,
yeah.
as we call it a juicy blister. Everyone gets very excited about that.
Wonderful.
It's just like towards the end, you get this assurance, like, is it going to pop? Is it going to pop? And you want to push it to get as much sample as possible because you've put another human being through this process and you want to get the most out of it for them and for yourself.
Of course.
But it's actually, it's a roller coaster. I've got the sample. It's okay.
Yes.
And then when you take it to the lab, it's another whole world of don't lose your sample.
Yeah, of course.
And you guys have now obviously, and it's a 3-day process, you've been through this bonding experience almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that was really neat to be in a medical situation or science situation and to share in that excitement, though I couldn't understand the excitement from your perspective, to be there and to sense sort of this effervescent experience.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And it seems like, I mean, Adam, did it help that PJ explained everything to you, that she treated you like a normal human being? You had good banter, clearly. Did all of that help with the whole process?
Well, I think so. I think that this was one of the things that was really useful, was that not only was PJ, you know, talking in a way that was respectful and, you know, taking an interest in making sure that I'm comfortable, but also very clear about the fact that she, while very sure of herself, was learning and open to sharing that these protocols were part of an experiment, not necessarily.
But that's great, because then it's a shared learning process, and like any feedback you give PJ, she'll know. Adapt and change.
Well, and I think that this is one of the things that, you know, make people distrustful or that make people very...
skeptical, maybe.
Yeah, scared in medical and science situations. Science situations less, maybe medical more.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, doctors are authorities and they approach you with you know, their authority,
mm-hmm.
and that can be scary,
mm-hmm.
And people can resist that, and there were lots of opportunities where I would have probably wanted to resist, right? You know, the study does take time. I became very tired afterwards because I had to interrupt my sleep schedule, and, you know, no one likes needles, though the needles were very sharp and very small, so it didn't really hurt.
Okay, that's good.
And also, the blistering process was by far not very.
I wouldn't imagine it to be fun at all for someone who sat there. But
yeah,
a lot of sitting and a lot of
just being very still.
Yeah,
yeah.
That machine's very loud, so
yes,
you know, from how like it's just an hour of you sitting very still,
which can be
quite annoying. But,
yeah,
I mean. We kept coming in our room, we're like, do you want a cup of tea? And,
oh, lovely.
You know, we were just trying to entertain the rest of our ability in those moments to take away from the idea that Adam was sitting very still.
Yeah.
So
now you've obviously gone from PhD student, and you obviously are still a PhD student, but now you've almost been like a study coordinator. What has that been like to take on that position?
Oh gosh, it's just quite overwhelming to have that much responsibility because...
Yes.
I am kind of responsible to see this project to completion, and I need other people's help, other human volunteer help. And it's, I kind of want to be personable, and I want to be nice and, you know, cheerful and have a good conversation with that person, because the last thing I want to happen in that room is for someone who is helping me to be uncomfortable. But at the same time, in my head, I need to be very organized and strict because Adam did need to be there at 9 o'clock because that was the protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's just been very exhausting having to draw the line and being quite firm at certain points. But at other points, you know, telling him about gossip that I heard.
Yes.
Or, you know, like
that balance
at the college.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just been like you're two different people or you're trying to balance two different mentalities in a working day. It's just exhausting.
Also now dealing with human beings. Human beings are tiring. So that's also... I'm not saying you personally are tiring.
Well,
don't worry.
I mean... might be in the minority there. But that, you know, there's... you know, it's good to know that it was also tiring for you because I think, you know, there's... I think, you know, in the sense that we're both doing a lot of work there in... I don't really know what sense is, but...
No, but I felt like while you were there, you were also engaging very much with my study. Like, you weren't, you could have just sat there and be like, okay, now what? But you asked questions. You're like, oh, how are you doing? How does it feel? Oh, is it exciting? And you were like, what does this do? And you were really interested in, you know, we were discussing what's the difference between pain and tenderness and how can we define that? And those things are you showing interest in my work. And it made it easier to be like, my participant's actually excited about my study. Oh, great, someone else
definitely
is on this bandwagon of this working out well.
Yes.
The end.
And it kind of comes back to, you know, I suppose the point from the very beginning in how fortuitous it was that you guys met here and both seem to have these interests that just collided, where one is interested in the process of infection, inflammation, and you're doing a PhD on that topic.
Yeah.
Although from, you know, slightly from different perspectives as well, which I guess is a big part of what we have here in Good Enough in this community. Is a very rich experience and people coming from different perspectives.
Yeah. So then, as a concluding comment, what would you almost advice would you give to fellow PhD students who have to become study coordinators like yourself?
Oh gosh, I would just, first thing, my advice would be prepare everything, like from a week in advance. I had all my tubes labelled for other samples the weekend before.
Wow.
Because I knew that the rush of the study is going to take over, and it fully did, but also make time. Because they are not mice, they are not animals that you're just gonna leave overnight somewhere, and I just get them as excited as possible. Because I kind of found a friendship with Adam, which is lovely, and
cute.
I hope to find that with every participant that I see. But I also, you have that responsibility of someone remembering a clinical experience outside of a hospital, and it's got you with it. So just make sure that
it's a pleasant experience.
It's a pleasant experience. I'm not sure, Adam, would you do something similar again if someone approached you?
Certainly. I think that the had some advice from like a professor that I found at the time I thought it was really terrible, but I keep going back to the advice, which is, you know, interest yourself to interest others, right?
Yeah.
So if you know, you can find something that you share in that experience, it's better than being just an informed participant. You're actually active in it and invested in helping it continue. But I'm sure that's...
No, I think the experience was... I've enjoyed it very much. I think I will continue being in clinical trials after I finish my PhD because I've just had such a blast doing some science, but also just on the personal level, it's just been great to get to meet other people and for them to do something completely different. So one of my other participants was doing a PhD in English, and it's just so nice for them to come in and they completely take your mind away from the science for a minute and
that break.
Just have a moment where Adam would say, what do you think about this? And it was something to do with this project, and we were discussing something completely
different.
Or, it's just nice. Much prefer to do what I do, but
definitely.
When
everyone shushes,
So, do you have any podcasts that you listen to that you would recommend to? Obviously, I mean, this is the good cast being number one, but after you've finished catching up on all of the good casts, what would you listen to? Anything sciencey or anything at all?
So I usually use the podcast to get away from my science background and to experience a different type of a conversation because, as you all know, being a PhD student, especially one that's in the lab, I spend all my time in the lab talking to people about science. I come home, I write about science. It's just really nice to
have a
listen
break
to something that's different on my way to work or just you educate yourself in a different way.
Any
like the TED Talks
good,
are quite good.
Perfect.
Something new, something completely different. I also like the inspirational ones, you know, when you really don't want to go to work and you have to be there because your participant's coming.
Yes.
Like, get up and go.
Yeah.
You need that inspiration.
And Adam, any update on your recommendations since we last spoke?
No podcast, but I'm really excited. I downloaded, or off of Audible or whatever, the Marie Kondo's book.
To Spark Joy?
I think it's the other one. The first one.
Oh, brilliant. Well,
what's it called?
So Marie Kondo
yeah.
has a show on Netflix that's all about decluttering your home in order to
tidying
spark
up
joy.
That.
Tidying
yes.
up with Marie Kondo.
Of course.
I saw a fantastic tweet recently where there was some sort of glitch on Netflix and the title of her show came up with a soldier with a gun running across the field. So her approaches seem to have changed, but all the same. Yeah. So we'll all look forward to touring your room, Adam. I'm
yes.
sure it'll be the most feng shui space in Good Enough.
Brilliant.
But for now, thank you guys so much for that really insightful chat. And hopefully we'll see you on the podcast again.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks again.
Thank you so much for listening. We hope you all enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was fun to record, and hopefully Adam will be back soon for round 3 of the podcast.
Absolutely. He's a natural at it.
Yeah, and if you want to chat to us about your research or your society or something cool that you heard about around college, make sure to get in touch with us. Just comment on the post in the Facebook group. Send us an email. Our email is goodcastpod@gmail.com. Stop us in the corridor or turn up at our doors.
Probably not the latter.
Probably not the latter. We're still very excited for the College Opera, which is happening on
the 12th and 14th of Feb
in the Great Hall.
And how do we pronounce it, Alex?
Cose fan tutte.
Tutte, that's
yeah.
it.
They're all the same. tickets are £8 on the square for members and a little bit more for non-members, but make sure to get yours soon as they are selling out fast.
So fast.
That's it from us for this week. We'll be back next week with another excellent good cast. In the meantime, be good and
let's be with you.